I am a poet, but if one is labelling to try to give some kind of a guidance, then I prefer to say artist because it suggests, it either invites clarification, requests for clarification, or it invites a sense of I do lots of things, and I do do lots of things.
Yes. And have they become more diverse recently,
I
or?
think so, yes. Having just published a book, well, within this month, called Snapshots, which are just literally verbal snapshots, and has invited one comment from a member of an audience. I like you, Lawrence. You don't do modern poetry. We can understand what you say. Which I thought, well, yes, if only you knew. Instead, I said, thank you very much. And doing that, and what I'm about to do with you, and what I do day by day, particularly with John Drever of Soundwork. And so, yes, it's becoming, if anything, more diverse. Though I am aware of, I'm not sure I could give you an example, but I'm aware more of repeating myself or doing the sort of thing that I do in some ways. After doing a thing for 40 plus years, you do begin to realize that you have your enthusiasms and inclinations.
But are your activities still sort of word-based, should we say? Even whatever they are.
No. I've recently been, earlier this year, I sound sang some paintings by Carlo Carra, the futurist. And in writing about that, I was requested to write about that. I've realized that one of the problems that I have in looking for useful quotes and so on is that I'm not entirely word-based. So that if one looks, for instance, at Saussure, the linguist, or what's the man's name? Forgotten the man's name. Anyway, comments on Russian formalism. They assume that the bottom line is word. And I've been reading some criticism of Stein, and they talk about word-based always and going down to the word. And the only thing I have found is a line or a phrase in Finnegan's Wake where he makes up a word, but it's something like abnegation of the etym, where he's clearly seeing that you break apart the word and you get something else. I think that from its time, that was to do with Rutherford and Co. talking about splitting the atom. But it works. So no, I tend to be word-based. I tend to be terribly literary, but and talk too much as well. But though it perhaps doesn't matter this time. But no, it can go down to sound making and gesturing.
This expression, sound singing,
Yes.
you described, did it come from Paul Dutton, or
From Paul Dutton.
a Canadian sound poet?
Canadian sound poet
Okay.
who describes what he does as sound singing, and I've nicked it from him.
So how can you, is it possible to just explain what sound singing is?
Making noises, sounds, which are non-verbal or go into the non-verbal, not as some would have it, pre-verbal, from some, to me, false idea of the ascent of man and the ascent of language, but non-verbal, which a lot of our communication is, even if it's just what you just did. Though that might be an honorary word, I don't know. But you know, if you say something to me I'm not sure of, and I go, before saying okay or no, you know, that's pushing the word quite a long
But that
way.
kind of communication requires the physical presence of a person, doesn't it? It's outside. For instance, there's you couldn't get into that, say, with emails or texting or any of that. It requires you to be in the presence of the person, to read their what might be called body language or intonation.
It requires a voice, yes. This typescript or an handwritten equivalent of it, but certainly typescript is a very, very poor notational system.
So does it? So this activity then require? It always requires a live presence.
Or a playback. You could do it with a recording.
Can you?
Well, hopefully.
But would you then be able to read the... So it would still be based entirely on sound then, not on the physical... reading somebody physically.
That would be a problem then, yes, right. I agree with that. That it might become less comprehensible.
Right.
And I find that almost quite interesting.
Mm.
What happens when you isolate things? And then you get into the achismatic, when you hear a sound, but you don't know how it's produced. And that becomes quite interesting, though aesthetically interesting, though perhaps less informationally communicative.
Right.
So in that way, yes, you always need to be present. And I think that live presence is an intensely important thing, an interesting thing, and always go for it, even if some of what I'm doing involves material abstracted, and you can't tell where it's come from.
Hmm.
If you see what I mean.
Yeah.
But then...
So you can't necessarily identify the source of the
sound. No, that's right. Hmm. And, you know, that's where I'm spending most of my energy at the moment, that interface with music. So even if I want live presence, I may like a cosmetic sound in there. But I want to be there so people can see me pressing the switch, even, or... Usually I sing back with it, I respond to what I hear.
Okay. Well, let's talk briefly about this film, because, what is it now, 3 o'clock, in an hour and a half, you are hopefully going to accompany a silent film of mine,
yes.
A 14-minute silent film, which I shot in 1991. The film itself has a fairly checkered sort of history, which I won't go into now, but you might have seen the film once.
I believe I have.
At the aquarium. You have a sort of vague memory of it.
Yes,
maybe.
Yes.
But that's all. And you are going to, we haven't really decided yet now what we're going to do, but you will accompany the film, you will perform.
I will vocalise, let's say.
Perhaps what is your plan for this film?
I don't have one.
No.
But I don't.
I think earlier you used the word suicidal in relation to what you're about to do.
Mm. Yes, I mean, a strained metaphor. Excessive metaphor.
Did you mean professional suicide?
Something along that line.
It's a risk, then.
There is a risk, I think. And thinking about this recently, because this seems to be one of the areas I'm going into without any great plan. I remembered a quotation from Alaric Sumner. It was a posting on a Poetry Etc. discussion list. And he talked about a performance I did with Bob Cobbing. And then towards the end, he was talking more about me than about Cobbing. And then towards the end, he said, "I always expect to see Lawrence make a complete prat of himself, or expect to see him one day make a complete prat of himself, when he tries to do something that is completely either impossible, something like that, or beyond his abilities to do." And this came back to me.
Right.
I was very pleased with it, because it referred to that... quote, suicidal tendency, riskiness.
Right. Riskiness. Do you think has it ever happened yet? Or do you think you've always pulled it off?
I've always got away with it.
Got away with it, okay. Well, that's good.
I think we were talking earlier and I described to you sound singing a series of 6 paintings by Carlo Carrà.
Mm.
And the last two were, he was becoming very much more, to me, recognisably Italian formalist rather than Italian futurist. And the paintings are very simple and very spacey. There's And I find nothing linguistic in them. I find nothing that I particularly want to respond to sound with. But I found myself on stage with them and an audience expecting me to go on entertaining them with peculiar sounds. And I'd abstracted in my head the previous four and sounded them to some extent. It was only for 30 seconds, so I was taking a bit of it, and I don't think I was doing it that well. But when I got to the donkey cart, and it's a man in a cart with a donkey, I thought, well, what's the sound of that then? You know, what do I do? So I clip-clopped across the stage. I knew that my shoes were clip-clopping, so I went... And then I went... And so, in a variety sense, or Max Wall sense, I don't know what that's done to your microphone.
It's probably gone a bit over the top.
I got off the stage, and the audience thought it was wonderful, and it's actually up on YouTube. But if I'm honest, it wasn't my greatest artistic moment, unless we're looking at me as a way of, you know, as an artist that goes on stage and does something completely bonkers and gets away with it, which sometimes I do. But some of the earlier things in that evening, and it was only a few minutes' performance, were serious attempts to sound the paintings, to use the paintings as a source of sound, as a source of stimulus of sound. Whereas what I did at the end was doing something. I may have done it quite well. I think I can pass quite well for a donkey among donkeys. When I really get going, I've done it. But the focus had changed from listen to this man's extended voice technique to look at this man's ability to entertain a drunk crowd. It's not the same thing.
Right, yeah. I remember when you did the aquarium event, when I showed the film, I don't know when, it must be 5-6 years ago now.
Must be, yes.
And it was the Finlay exhibition to do with concrete poetry. And I think a colleague of yours, is it Harry Gilonis?
Mm-hmm.
I think he came along and he almost tried to dissuade you from taking part in it. I remember I overheard him saying to you, Lawrence, don't get involved in this. You're being set up or something. As though it was a sort of freak show or something. Because we invited a few other... there was Ivor Callan, who was doing a kind of... doing his Scottish... gibbering, I suppose you'd call it.
Mm.
I don't know if you remember him.
I don't.
And there were two or three others, and some of whom were, one or two of whom were decidedly amateur, shall we say.
Yes. I remember that bit.
Yeah. And I think Harry Gilonis was probably trying to suggest to you that it was the wrong place for you. But I hope you don't feel that this afternoon.
No, I've... I'm a consenting adult. So I vaguely remember that, but I've had so many conversations with Harry about the perfidy of this and that. And that's not to disclaim connection with his position or whatever. I don't honestly remember what he said, so I can't comment. But he's a kind man, and he's highly informed. And he may, whatever he said, he would have meant it well. And it...
He probably meant that it wouldn't be good for your academic career to take part in such a...
Well, I'm sure of that. I often have as my throwaway line, well, there goes my career again,
right.
You know.
Okay.
But in view of as we're about to celebrate my 60th birthday and the courts have just reaffirmed that we're all sacked when we're 65, I don't know about career. It's a pity, and one needs... One perhaps needs to be careful not to behave too seriously among fools and charlatans and so on. Whether those words are fair or not to anyone, I don't know. But
You also had a metaphor earlier about this film. What was it? The Indiana Jones film.
Oh, yes.
As a as a way of your approach that might...
Yes. If you don't know what... Try not to know what you're doing is... I mean, in a way, we're going to go and look at it, because the odds are fairly stacked against me, I think, today, and I can say why if you want. But when I am more in control, when I'm deciding what I'm doing, I have produced the image, and I have probably discussed it with anyone I'm going to perform with, or I haven't discussed it, but there's a history to it. So, for instance, in November, 14th of November, at Goldsmiths, I'm hoping to perform with Chris Good. And Chris and I have performed before, and we almost certainly won't plan anything. But there is a rapport, I believe. And I think that though John Drever and I discuss a lot, though we don't actually plan, but we talk through what would we do if this happened, what would we do if that. Again, there is a rapport developing, and I feel that we have enough shared experience and shared vocabulary that we could just go on stage, and do it. So those are exceptions proving rules or whatever, but there is, I prepare my material as a graphic artist, and then I go on stage to perform it. And I try to separate myself from the graphic knowledge from the performer's knowledge. I mean, it's just like, don't think about it, you know, or don't look down. Yeah, you know, of course. So I try to look freshly at what I am going to perform, which in terms of the Roman alphabet is unperformable. What is there's an essay coming up on the next issue of Readings magazine from a talk I did at ICA earlier this year, and it's a Bob Cobbing anecdote. The late Alan Riddle asking the late Bob Cobbing, "That looks to me like an upside down U, Bob." And Bob says, "Well, that's probably what it is." "Well, what's the sound of an upside-down U?" Slight note of irritation and contempt there as well, which I haven't got in. And Bob says, "Well, that's just my question. What is the sound of an upside-down U?" End of conversation. You know that I can return your ball, whatever you throw at me.
Yeah.
But there is that question, and Alan's question was in some ways very serious. What is the sound of an upside down U? So when I present myself with such a thing, I'm asking it too. The difference is I'm determined to give an answer. And you've got to do something, because the audience is expecting it, and this money has been spent, and these people have come, and you really can't say, "Well, I don't feel like it." So there is a film by Indiana Jones in which he is, as I recall it, he is standing on a cliff with a tunnel behind him, the only way out. And down the tunnel is rolling a stone ball, the same diameter almost as the tunnel, and it's rolling. So he's in trouble. So he steps off the cliff. And as he steps off the cliff, a stone staircase opens at his feet and he runs down it. And up to now, that's happened. This may be like the old joke of the man who jumps off the top of a building, and as he's passing floor two, calls out to people looking out, "No problems yet."
Yes, okay. What would be the worst outcome? Apart from hitting the floor, of course.
Well, that's it. I mean, once you put it, you think...
I mean, you must have confidence in... You must sort of know that your inner resources... You must know that somewhere within you, you're going to be all right, really.
I hope I will be all right. But I do... I also have learned, being someone who gets wound up and concerned and nervy, I've learned that in a situation, you know, something's terribly important and you're on a train. And to quote Kingsley Amis' Lucky Jim, the driver, gets an idea for a poem and everything stops. And you think, I'm going to be late. You think, well, what is the worst that can happen to me? I think this is it CBT? That's computer-based training. Computer-based therapy, it is CBT, yes. Where you are apparently told to, you know, to think through things and think other ways. So you sit there in your carriage thinking, what's the worst that can happen? And sometimes the answer is, you know, you're going to lose a lot of money or you're going to lose opportunities. But even so, just that process, I think, has a calming effect. What is the point of getting upset? So I try to do that as I approach a performance. But it's going quite well at the moment. I'm really quite nervous and upset, and that's quite good. Oh, I'm very good at hiding it. I've been a school teacher. And even if you're scared, never show it, because it'll only get worse.
Right.
Always look as though you've got infinite resources.
Yes, I wouldn't have guessed.
No. I'm not happy.
No.
And I think,
well, you're worried about it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it matters to me. Yeah. It matters. There are people coming to come and see.
Yeah.
Who, I don't know if they're going to do me any good or not, but I don't want to let them down. Right. I take the question of audience very seriously.
Right.
And I don't want to let you down. I don't want to let myself down. That's probably more important, but I put it last.
Yeah.
And also then I've got to get back on the horse, should this happen.
Yeah.
So one would try for, if it went really wrongly, one would try for the sort of the Kara performance I've just described, where people like it, and then you are... can be honest and say it actually wasn't that good. That's okay. I can live with that. I'd rather not. I'd rather be brilliant every time.
Yeah. Do you think do you sense when it's working from the audience reaction? Do you think? I mean, and have you ever done it before with a film?
I've never done it with a film.
Oh.
So the Kara was the first time with a painting.
Right.
Though I saw Cobbing do it. He did it in the. In the sound box at the Royal Festival Hall. I mean, he did it many places, but I witnessed him and wrote about it. And that was some years ago, by definition, because he's been dead 8 years. So it's probably 10, 15 years ago. No, I've never... I'm making animation, black and white animation at the moment, of my own images to perform with. No, I've never done it with a film, but I have done it with a still image. And this is where the problem comes, that one is using someone else's image and using an image that wasn't made as a visual poem. I mean, supposing I went, I would love to Toronto and met up with Paul Dutton, and supposing he said, Lawrence, let's perform together. Would you like to perform my poem? I'd say, sure. But that, again, that's got a comforting feeling, and there's a man whose work I've studied, and a man I admire and like as a friend, and he's giving me a thing he thinks he can sound sing, so I probably can. And also, I might, at any rate, I think he's got more strength of character, but I might get into showing off some of my new techniques rather than making the appropriate sound. So I would be... Though I might try both. So there's that. There's that you have made your film as a film, and I am used to moving around slowly around a page, however we define that. I mean, I can work with projection, it doesn't bother me now. But I move around, going out and in of the space, moving around, rather like also... The computer-based maps where you can go in to more and more detail. So you can go along a line and just make a little sound, or you can go in deeper and begin to get some of the jagged edges that aren't visible or whatever. Or other lines are smoothing out, of course, if we stick with the computer image. And you've got all that freedom. But in a film, everything's on the move all the time. And what was on the move was not immediately soundable. There's one risk if you, I know there's a garden in it, and there's a risk that I start doing cinema and music, that I start making da 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 da, da kind of sounds. Right. Yeah,
it is. I should. The film is called Still.
Right.
And I do quite like the fact that the word still is ambiguous.
Yes.
You know, the still photograph, still with something still going on, which is strange, considering the strange double use of the word.
Yes. Yes.
There's something persisting, even though
that's right. Yes.
Still.
Mm.
And then a stillness and so on. I think there's three or four interpretations of the word. And it does, in some ways, it is. Some of the images are like still images. I do think it's quite an open-ended film.
Yes.
It didn't have a strict agenda. But maybe we should finish this here.
Yeah.
And then we'll record your piece for the film.
Right.
And then maybe we've got time to do 5 minutes afterwards and you can say how it went for you.
That would be good. While we're doing that, I think of it, and you can cut it out if you want.
Sure.
But I like words like still. I like that. My favourite is cleave, which means coming together and pulling apart.
Oh, right.
Which I once used. I was the best man once. Someone was foolish enough. And I spoke of these two cleaving apart and cleaving together. And I was told, you got my mum, she was crying. And I thought, oh, that's useful.
Yeah.
That's a good measure. Because I mean, they're lovely people.
Yeah.
And I do see them, as everyone does with their lovers. Yeah. But yeah, the word cleave is superb. It means what you want.
Right.
And still, as you say, I hadn't thought of it, but there's a fracture point. Maybe that's where I'll go in.
Good.
Because I remain a terribly literary person.
Right. Okay, that's great. Thank you, Lawrence Upton.